You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Penny Whips has been in the book publishing industry for more than 20 years. And on September 7, 2008, Penny took a call that her youngest son had died from an accidental overdose. As her daughter spoke the words a parent never wants to hear, her heart stopped and shock and disbelief took over. Listen to this encounter. "Kyle's dead, and Mom, I'm sorry, but he died of a heroin overdose." "What did you say? What happened?" "I'm sorry, Mom, but he died of a heroin overdose." "There's no way he died of an overdose. He was scared of that stuff. Mom, I'm so sorry, but it's true. Kyle was with his friends, and about 1:30 yesterday, they found him dead. The police and coroner have been trying to find your contact information, and when they couldn't, they came here." One friend told Penny he knew Kyle was acting a little differently and possibly had taken something that was dangerous, because he hadn't seen Kyle acting that way in a long time. This friend wanted to say something, but he didn't. He didn't want Kyle to get mad at him, and decided to give him some time and then talk to him in the morning. And when they went to wake him, Kyle was dead. Later, that boy, that same boy, told Penny he would regret that decision for the rest of his life. And that's how Just One Time began. Just One Time. It's J-U-S-T, and then the number one, and then an X.com. This is an organization that challenges students who know their friends are potentially placing their lives at risk to seek help and possibly save lives. And joining us is Penny Whips. Hi, Penny.
Hi, Drew. How are you?
Fantastic. You and I have worked together on some books over the last number of years. You've been in the publishing industry game, publicist game, for how long now?
Well, just a little over 20 years.
Wow.
yeah.
Definitely a veteran in the industry.
Well, I don't know about that.
But. Come on, you are too. That's what Ellen tells me, Ellen Graf Martin. She is the one.
Oh, she's such a good friend.
You know, I've said this about Ellen many times. If you don't like Ellen, you're the one with the problem.
Absolutely. That would be 100% correct.
And there's another gal that you and I know. Excuse us, folks, while you know, Drew and Penny just have a little time by ourselves here. Rhonda Funk.
I know. She lives in Sisters. Is that crazy?
Yeah.
So she's my neighbor. We talked just a couple days ago. She said, say hi to Drew for me.
Oh, good, good. So. Yeah, she's another go-getter for sure and a heart of gold. I've often said about Rhonda that she is the new female Keith Green. She's just got that much energy, that much passion, that much talent.
She's a delight.
Yeah. Well, you were just up here in Toronto.
I was, and I'm so sorry I couldn't be there in the studio with you. I couldn't get a plane back home, and I would have had to stay 2 extra days. So
yeah, well, you're only missing a snowstorm, so don't worry about that.
Oh, trust me, I experienced it when I was there a bit. In fact, I came home. I left it snow here in Sisters and came home to most of it gone. So
good. Well, I'm glad most of it's gone. I have another friend that lives out near you, Paul Young, who of course wrote The Shack.
He lives over on the other side of the hill.
Yeah, yeah. The other side of the hill. It sounds like he's living in the hood or something. Well, listen, this is a story that every parent doesn't want to hear but wants to hear. They want to hear, you know, how people process this. And every time, you know, my backstory in your story is that God and I have this long-standing argument or this threat. You know, can you imagine me threatening God? God, do with me whatever you want. Mess me up. Okay, fine. I probably won't like it. But if something happens to my kids, you and I are going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just start off this interview with you, Penny, and ask you, did you have a problem with God after your son overdosed?
I have to say that, now you have to understand, it's only been 28 months and 8 days. But I have not gone there yet. God was incredibly gracious to me at the very beginning because I spoke 5 times within 3 weeks of Kyle's death. And hearing the response of kids and parents, I think it was God's way of showing me what he was going to do with Kyle's story. So Kyle's life would be, it wouldn't be all about how he died, excuse me, but Just One Time would be a legacy. But I think that's really what gave me hope. Now, does that take away the pain and the grief and, you know, missing my son? No, it doesn't. But for some reason, right away, because I spoke so quickly and how the kids were responding, it was like, okay. Now, you know, people have asked me, am I angry at God? I said, no, I never lost the fact that, you know, God is good, and I believe, you know, he's sovereign. Do I understand it? I guess that would be a better question for me, and I would say no.
No, of course not.
And I've chosen to be okay with not understanding it this side of heaven.
Okay, is there a difference, or do you think there would be a difference? Hard for you to say because you haven't experienced both, but I'm wondering if there would be a difference in the scenario. So if the scenario is different, if someone had murdered your son versus your son making a choice that ended his life.
Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, that's hard to say, but I don't know. I don't know, Drew. That's just a really good question. I think, you know, because I guess we'll talk later. I did have a chance to, I didn't meet him personally, but I saw the trafficker that was, that his heroin that came down the line was the one that was the heroin that killed Kyle. But when I saw him, I just felt such sadness, not versus anger. So I don't know. If that makes me, I don't know what that says about me, but for some reason I'm not dealing with that. Now, I did have a hard time with one of the boys, the boy that actually did heroin with that night, and just working through that.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, because he was almost a partner in crime, right?
Right, right. And so that was pretty tough, working through that.
Where's that boy at these days? I mean, did this scare the crap out of him, and now he's clean and, you know, living the great godly life? You don't know.
Okay, we met with the boys, all of the boys that were with Kyle except for one, 3 days after Kyle died, or 2 days after, I think. And after the memorial service, so Kyle died on the 6th, the memorial service was on the 12th, that boy left town, and I have not had any contact with him. Now, he was supposed to come back after the funeral, and we were going to talk to him again because there were some unanswered questions, but that hasn't happened yet, and I would assume that's because he hasn't worked through his things and he's ready to go there yet.
Sure, sure. Folks, we are on the phone with Penny Whips, and Penny has just got an incredibly heart-wrenching story about her son overdosing on heroin. And the stuff he took is this black tar stuff, right, where you can't really count on the potency, can you?
Right, and that's what's so crazy about black tar heroin. You could get something that would be 5% proof or 90% proof. Hmm. And the reason why it's so popular is because it's so cheap. And when I talked to the coroner, because we have evidence, or we have the word of a couple of friends that they think he tried it in the spring of that year once before.
Right.
And when I talked to the coroner, I'm kind of a pretty straightforward girl, and I just want the truth.
Yes, you are.
How hard it is.
Yep.
And I asked the coroner, I said, look, I need to know, was my son using, was he an addict? And she said, we checked his body head to toe, and there were 3 needle marks in his arm. There weren't any old needle marks. So she said, honey, if your son had been a user, he wouldn't be dead, because his body would have built up a resistance, a habitual user, excuse me.
Yeah.
He would have had, you know, a resistance built up in his body, and he would have probably not died. But the reason, because his body, it was so foreign, and probably the purity of the heroin is what killed him.
Penny, my son went through some health issues a few months ago, and I had a relative challenge me and say, well, you know, the parents are the last to know. You think you know your son, but maybe you don't, and maybe he's struggling with something else, and maybe he needs to see a psychologist. You know, there were headaches is what he was going through, really bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there was nothing I could say to convince this relative of mine that I know my son. I mean, I know him. Did you feel the same way? And so when they found, when you were told that they died of a heroin overdose, were you just another one of those parents who were duped and your son was living a double life and you didn't know about it? Or was it just,
no.
I mean, what, you know what I mean?
You know, that's a good question. I knew that Kyle had done recreational use of alcohol and marijuana when he was in high school.
Okay.
Every once in a while he had this group of friends, you know, they hung out and they would do something, what I consider dangerous living, which
right.
is what I talk about. But we would talk through things like that. The reason why I responded to my daughter, I said, somebody's lying to you, because he would never do that. And we had talked about things like that. So, you know, I would say that Kyle and I, in fact, a couple of people, friends, after was, you know, you don't need to feel guilty. And I said, I don't feel guilty. I had a great relationship with my son. We talked 2 days before he died. But I do believe he had this one particular friend who he just would not walk away from. And Kyle had actually rededicated his life to the Lord. I think it was the March before he died, and it was a true experience. And he was living with my nephew. In fact, he's been on your show, Mike Yankoski, with Under the Overpass.
Right.
Down in Santa Barbara, they had a big house, and there was a bunch of kids there. And he and his wife, Danae, which is actually my niece, they were the house parents, and they were there when that happened. And it was authentic. And our pastor said, this is authentic.
So, and Penny, this was a month before he passed?
No. He died in September, and this happened like March or April.
March or April, okay.
In Santa Barbara, and then he had moved back to Oregon. And
okay.
He was going over to Portland. They have this huge music festival every year where like 1,500 bands come. And he was with this group of friends that they had occasionally would do things that...
All right, so you're saying peer pressure is really the cause of all this?
Well, I don't know. I would say he was with his friends, and yes, that was peer pressure, but and only two of them actually did the heroin. The other kids had gone to bed. But I just don't know enough of the backstory, and hopefully we'll get some more information when we get to meet with this other kid eventually, if he ever comes forward and meets with us. But
right.
I do know it was Kyle's choice, you know, and I'm very honest about that. did Kyle want to die? No, he didn't. I mean, he had just moved back in May to start saving money. He was going to go on an extended trip to capture Uganda with our church. And
wow.
So, you know what I'm saying? So there's just these things that don't fit. And I do think friends have a lot of power in persuasion.
Yeah, so. Which of course is why you're into this just one time. Is it time or times?
It's just
one time.
And
yeah.
The reason why I because it only takes one time. It takes one time of speaking up on behalf of your friend. It takes one time of their dangerous living, you know. And so this was the one. I'm speaking more of the boy who, you know, just was like, I knew in my gut I should have said something, and
right.
I didn't, and I will regret it forever.
What about beating yourself up?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, every once in a while, you know, stuff comes in, and I just have to, you know, I just have that thing where I just give it over to the Lord because, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda will kill you.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you look back, and you know, I had Kyle for just short of his 20, he died 23 days short of his 22nd birthday. So he died on the 6th, and we buried him on the 12th, and his birthday was on the 29th. So I look back at that, Drew, and I go, I should have prayed more. But we had an honest relationship. I do think, though, like I was a single parent, and I've been single for about 15 years. So I do think Kyle was really protective of me, and he didn't want to hurt his mother. And so I think possibly had we, had that not been there, and I don't know, you know, that maybe he would have been more forthright. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So he did have a mentor, and there were things that he kept from his mentor, too, because he didn't want to hurt him. So I think there's that you know, the son is trying to, you know, protect his mom kind of thing.
Sure. On the phone with Penny Whips, and Penny is, well, the founder of this organization, JustOneTime.org. JUST one, the number one, and then an X.com. I know that you're promoting this ministry and you're talking about it. So what's the soundbite? I mean, we've got a million ministries out there going left, right, and center, but I want to know about this one. And one of the I'm a little ADD today, so I'm all over the map, but
okay.
The symbol or the skull, that is just, oh.
It's intense. And actually, when the design... Face Out Studios did that, and they're just this amazing design firm that took us on as a nonprofit last year and did this free of charge, did our whole website. And we have a programmer that is amazing as well and came on and said, I believe in this. I'm going to do this as well. So we are a 501c3. So, but that skull, that when it was sent to me, it literally freaked me out.
Yeah.
I said, oh, my gosh. Well, the Christians are going to totally hate it because it's so dark. But my, it's funny, they asked me, are you embarrassed by this? And I said, no. I said, it's extremely uncomfortable. But you know what? The topic.
Well, the topic is.
My presentation is so intense with what we do in schools that we needed a symbol that, first of all, would get their attention, but also relay the seriousness of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so we stayed with it. But it is very intense.
Yeah,
it would make a great tattoo, though.
It would, seriously. And this is radio, so it's a little weird we're talking about this insignia,
yeah.
I guess. So go to the website, JUST, and then the number one, and then an X.com, and you'll see it, mm-hmm. and you'll go, whoa. The grieving process.
Yes.
Apparently there's many stages.
Yes.
Where are you at with all of that? And looking back now, it's been a couple of years, do you think you've stiff-armed one of the stages? You've put something off, you've ignored, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I read about 3 or 4 months into my process of grief right after Kyle died, I started reading a ton of grief books. But I would say the first 5 weeks, which was, I got called and I headed home, flew home. It was a horrendous, horrendous ride, if I may say so.
Cool.
And, the first week you're doing everything you need to do to do this memorial service. And then for the next 4 weeks while I stayed here, I just spent so much time with Kyle's friends and obviously his siblings and family because everyone was just so devastated. And then I went back to Atlanta. And that's where I crashed in what I call going through acute grief, which is, it's the part where I was very ADD. I could do an email, for work for 15 minutes. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. And I just go lay down and go into bed for 3 hours. And then you'd get back up and you'd go back to your computer and go, oh, I just need to go take a bath or I just need to have a cup of tea or, so it was a very, you can't focus, you're really numb. I remember a friend of mine, a pastor in Philadelphia, his name's Brian Jones, and he's a great guy, and he called me and he said, what are you doing? God told me to call you right now. So what's going on? I said, I'm in my bed and I don't want to get up. So he talked to me for 20 minutes, and I think that was about 6 or 7 months after Kyle died, and it was the first time after he talked to me that I got out of bed and I could actually focus for 2 or 3 hours. But it took about 6, 7 months, and I often wondered why. I just didn't feel released. Everyone's like, are you going to move back home? Are you going to move back to Oregon? And I just didn't feel released to do that. And then now looking back, I think God wanted me to walk through 11, that was 11 months before I moved back home to start, just one time. I was alone, and I knew very few people. In Atlanta, and so I really had to go to a very dark place, and I tell people I was determined to come out of my grief in a place where I could still continue to be loving and gracious and kind to people that I do life with. I did not want to be bitter and angry, so I went through what I call the center of my pain, and quite frankly, it was very, very difficult, but it really prepared me to come back here and walk in, and I live in a small community, so walk into the community pain of losing Kyle.
Right.
So I guess you would say I kind of walked through my grief in a strategic way, in a sense, but I will say this. If someone asked me, what is your journey of grief like? And I said this yesterday on Huntley Street. I said, it's like riding a surfboard on a wave in the ocean. Some days it's amazing, and I can ride around on that surfboard and enjoy the surf. And then other days I'll fall off and have to hang onto the board for dear life, and then there's other days where I crash and burn. And for somebody who's going through grief, all three of those scenarios can be in the same day or they can be months apart.
Wow.
So for me, grief is extremely unexpected, and I look at each day like, what's it going to bring to me today?
Okay, we've got so much to cover in the next 5 minutes, so let me just start with emotional ambushes. What are the mm-hmm. triggers that still, sometimes there's smell, maybe, he had a certain deodorant or cologne, or sometimes
right.
there's something in the house that you see, or a friend, or, mm-hmm. What are the triggers where you just all of a sudden comes out of nowhere and you get emotionally ambushed?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. Music was a big deal because all my kids are musical, and Kyle was an amazing singer. So he sang this song to my niece my cousin called Brown Eyed Girl. Every time that comes on the radio, you just get whammed. Christmas, looking through stuff, Pez's, those stupid little candy pezzas. He collected them, and I'd bring them from when I'd travel, you know, around the world or all over the world, whatever. I'd bring him a pez. So I'd look at a pez and go, oh, that's a cool pez. I should get that for Kyle's stocking.
Yeah.
And then I'd go, Penny. Or we were going to plant flowers at the grave, and my cousin and I are, you know, girls. We thought, gosh, I wish, you know what, I'm just going to call Kyle and have him help me go, you know, and then I'm thinking, that's really sick because it's his grave. You know what I mean? So things like that where you go, oh, Kyle would love that. And I, oh, he, but he's dead. And that's when it still hits. It's so surreal. Kyle is dead. Is he really dead? Yes, he's dead. Penny, you saw his body. He's dead.
Okay, Penny, what do you say to the already neurotic parents that are listening to this? They're already overprotective. There are, you know, their kid is 23 years old, and they're still a helicopter parent.
Yeah.
You don't want them to go nuts over this story, but yet there's others that are they're disconnected with their child. They're not involved.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two paradigms out there that you really, I think, your message is just going to be ridiculously helpful for.
What I would say, the most important thing for a parent is to make sure you have a safe environment for your kids to be really honest so they can tell you whatever they need to tell you. You're not freaking out. You're not going, oh, my gosh, we got to call the cops or on your friend, or if it's them, the kid is trying to talk to their parents about what's really going on. If we can be parents that create a safe place for our kids to be really honest, and that's going to be hard for us.
Yeah, because we're afraid of turning our home into some incense-burning hippie house where everything goes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying open communication with your child so that you can get them help or their friends help. And that means that we as parents have kind of got to suck it up, keep our mouth shut, and listen. It's a big thing about listening.
Man, my daughter and I have had a few ding-dongs in the last few weeks, and yeah, your message is hitting home.
Uh-huh.
All right, September 29th, mm-hmm. 1986 is... this beautiful child comes into your life. You get almost 22 years of life together. And then September 7th, lay it out. The initial way this went down was a phone call from your daughter, correct?
Mm-hmm. My daughter called me, and actually they've been trying to call me all evening, but I was at some friend's house for dinner, and I came home and put my phone downstairs because I wanted to go to sleep, and I didn't want somebody from the West Coast waking me up because they did it all the time, sometimes just for fun. But then there was some knocking on my door at 12:30 at night on the 6th, and I didn't go down there because I lived alone in this big condo, and I thought, there's no way kids are messing around. So, but then I had this, something took hold of my heart, this fear, and it was like, Penny, what if someone needs you? Maybe it's someone like one of your friends here in Atlanta. So I went down and got my cell phone, and there were two calls from my daughter and two from my cousins, all saying, please call Heidi. So I called her, and she said, Mom, where are you? And I said, well, I'm at home. And she goes, are you alone? I go, well, yes, I'm alone. And she goes, well, I'm really sorry, Mom, but Kyle's dead. And I think she was in shock, too, you know, just because she had just been contacted by our local police and the chaplain. And I said, I'm sorry, what did you say? And she's like, Kyle's dead, Mom. And she said, I'm really sorry that you're alone. And I said, well, was he in a car accident? I just went into shock, truly went into shock. And then that's when she said, no, Mom, I'm really sorry, but he died of a heroin overdose. And I said, Heidi, someone's lying to you. His friends are lying. That's not true. And then I heard her say to my brother, Don, I think she's going to hang up. She's going to hang up. And so Don came on. He said, Penny, I'm so sorry you're alone, but it's true, Kyle died of a heroin overdose. And Mike's here, and he's trying to get you a plane ticket home. Just stay on the phone.
So, wow.
And I literally went into shock.
Oh.
I mean, I was like, okay, you know, and then, yeah. I don't even know how. Honestly, people say, you know, I can't even imagine your pain, and I say, well, I can't imagine it either because
no.
I'm still discovering it, to be honest with you.
Well, it might sound a little trite because, I know you, but I don't know you. Enough to, I don't know. I just feel just horrible for you, and I'm so sorry this happened. And yet I'm kind of proud of how you've taken this. And I guess maybe a lot of parents, well, maybe not a lot, but I know of a number of parents who've taken their grief and channeled it into something positive and forward momentum, you know. And for you to pick up on the fact that some of his friends knew, and for whatever reason, you know, social retardation of a lot of young people, and they're not sticking their nose in other people's business. They don't, you know, we don't want to be like that. We want to be the cool friend or whatever. I don't know. Whatever the deal is, for you to develop this Just One Time Ministry website, where I can imagine, you know, you're equipping parents, you're equipping young people, you're rallying the troops to say, no, it is worth it, and you do not want to be sitting at a funeral of your friend because you didn't open your gap.
Yes, absolutely. And that's my biggest thing when I talk into students is challenge them, letting them know first that they have the power to help their friend, that they risk their friends being angry. I say, love your friend with a protective love that says, Drew, I'm okay with you being angry at me. If I find that you're doing something that's going to hurt you or somebody else, I'm going to call somebody that I trust and get you help. I'm okay with you being ticked off at me.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing. And I think the big thing is we're trying to say that Just One Time is peer pressure in reverse, using that negative peer pressure to a positive thing and letting students know they have the power to save lives. And they do. And I think that if kids get a hold of that, it'll be stronger than any presentation that drug awareness groups, myself included, going into all kinds of schools, it will have more power than any of those.
I love the phrase dangerous living, and I love the fact that you even include texting while driving in the, underneath that category of dangerous living. And I cannot wait to see if it's going to be possible for you and the trafficker to be on the speaking circuit together. Oh my goodness, will that be insane.
Yeah, that was I thought I'd be angry, you know, when I first saw him. And I just was so conflicted because here is this man who has a family, he has children. And, you know, he, you know, I talked to the U.S. Attorney's Office. He wasn't a hardened criminal. And he, you know, he was probably trying to feed his family. And that's not to say...
Not justifying it. He made bad choices.
No.
Right,
I'm just
yeah.
saying there's another side to it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When you look at that, and then to see him weep when I was talking in the court, and then him getting up and weeping, and I had no idea this was going to happen, and if this was my son, I would never be the same, and I'm so sorry, and it was very moving.
However you want to punish me, go ahead and punish me, right? This is basically what he said.
I receive anything that you give me,
man.
Because I'm at fault. I mean, it was amazing.
So he's out now, is he not?
No. He's in federal prison.
And for how much longer?
Well, he just got sentenced in July. It happened almost 2 years after, because there was a whole process that we don't have time to go into, but he received 68 months, which is just short of 6 years, in federal penitentiary, and then they will deport him back to Honduras when he's done.
Wow. Penny, I like you.
I like you, too.
Oh, stop.
I've always liked you.
Stop. Thank you very, very much for sharing your guts and this journey and for taking it all and moving it forward into this ministry. Again, folks, very simply, the website is just, and then the number one, and then x.com, justonetime.com. Good for you, Penny. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew, for having me.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Penny Whips on the Drew Marshall Show. That was our journey segment. Boy, I just cannot get over that. And whenever a parent loses a child, we know that's not the way life is supposed to go. There's something intrinsic. I mean, it's just inside us. Just rips our guts out. All right, folks, a short break. When we come back, Joel Rosenberg, award-winning and best-selling author. You know his books. He's going to help me, I guess, unscramble my Israel experience. I was there for a month, and I walked away from the thing more disturbed than when I went. This guy is a geopolitical expert, also an end times expert, and he's put those two worlds together. And there is some fascinating things this guy is going to tell us. Joel Rosenberg up next. Stay with us.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.